ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
You will recite this verse, text number 14. Last time we discussed text 13.
Tadritam manye
Yanmam
vadasi
Keshava
Nahi te Bhagavan vyaktim
Vedur
devana danavaha.
O Krishna, I totally accept as truth all that you have told me. Neither the demigods nor the demons, O Lord, can understand your personality. So it's a small purport, so I would like to read the purport also. Prabhupada says very beautiful points here. Purport by His Divine Grace, says Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki? Arjuna herein confirms that persons of faithless and demonic nature cannot understand Krishna. He is not known even by the demigods. So what to speak of the so-called scholars of this modern world? By the grace of the Supreme Lord, Arjuna has understood that the Supreme Truth is Krishna and that he is the perfect one. One should therefore follow the path of Arjuna. He received the authority of Bhagavad Gita. As described in the fourth chapter, the parampara system of disciplic succession for the understanding of Bhagavad Gita was lost, and therefore Krishna re-established that disciplic succession with Arjuna because he considered Arjuna his intimate friend and a great devotee. Therefore, as stated in our introduction to Gita Upanishad, Bhagavad Gita should be understood in the parampara system. When the parampara system was lost, Arjuna was selected to rejuvenate it. The acceptance by Arjuna of all that Krishna says should be emulated. Then we can understand the essence of Bhagavad Gita, and then only can we understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Here the main, last week we were discussing the previous verse, how Krishna, after speaking the Chatushloki, Bhagavad Gita stopped and then Arjuna began. And Arjuna immediately glorifies Krishna. Param Dham, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavan, Purusham Shashvatam Devyam Adi Devam Ajam Vibham. And he cites the evidence of the great sages like Asita, Devala, Narada and all those rishis. And here he says, I totally accept as truth Sarvametad Ritam Manye Yanmam Vadasi Keshava, whatever truth you have told me, Krishna, without any reservation. So Srila Prabhupada would stress on this point many times in his early day lectures. You will hear in Prabhupada's lectures on accepting Bhagavad Gita as it is and accepting Bhagavad Gita without any motivated interpretations. So in one of his such writings, Prabhupada says that Bhagavad Gita should be accepted in toto without any interpretation or without any deletion or without any whimsical participation. So in one place he writes like this. So interpretation means motivated interpretation, which means to misconstrue some meaning which Krishna did not intend to say. Trying to give some meaning to Bhagavad Gita which Krishna never intended to say. Concocting some meaning and giving one's own interpretation. So that kind of interpretation is condemned. I have a quote here. This is from C. See, this Prabhupada writes this one, I think, is in Sword of Knowledge. I'll just read out directly so that everyone will get an opportunity to think about it. Once, one of the brahmacharis of our ashram met Dr. Sarvapalli Radhakrishnan, who is a spiritualist of sorts, spiritualist of sort, and an erudite scholar. Dr. Radhakrishnan is the Vice President of India as I write this essay. On meeting him, our brahmachari received from him a copy of his Bhagavad Gita as a gift. Dr. Radhakrishnan had translated this Gita into English and written a commentary on it, and it sold well in the market for 10 rupees in those days, 1954. The brahmachari read the book and came to us a little dissatisfied, though the book itself was deeply esoteric. The reason for his dissatisfaction was that Dr. Radhakrishnan's writing lacked spiritual insight. In many places, he had mishandled and misinterpreted the text, and thus he had made his book unacceptable to spiritualists in the line of pure devotion. This is a perfect example of the Srimad Bhagavatam statement 1.1.1 that by him, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion. Muhyanti Atsurayaha. When the Lord so easily bewilders Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Indra, and other great universal controllers, it's not at all surprising that Dr. Radhakrishnan is placed into illusion. The Brahmachari was especially shocked and hurt by Dr. Radhakrishnan's misinterpretation of text 34 of chapter 9, which appears in his book on page 254. He came to us very depressed, wanting to discuss this passage. The following words are found in the book. It is not the personal Krishna to whom we have to give ourselves up utterly, but the unborn, beginningless, eternal who speaks through Krishna. We have not the slightest intention of confronting a world-famous philosopher like Dr. Radhakrishnan with arguments. Yet, on the Brahmachari's repeated request, we have to scrutinize the text and point out the discrepancies. We have great respect for Dr. Radhakrishnan not only because he is a vice president of a country, but also because of his scholarship and his position as an erudite master of Hindu philosophy. Furthermore, he is faithful to the Brahminical tradition he hails from and is a follower of Mayavad school. Going by the oft-quoted dictum that it is better to have a learned enemy than a foolish friend, I feel encouraged in this matter. An intelligent opponent will present reasonable rebuttals, but an ignorant friend may bring about disaster with his floundering. Therefore, we feel no compunction about strongly arguing against his points, against the points Radhakrishnan makes in his Bhagavad Gita commentary. And then he is saying here, this is most important. A well-known Bengali saying goes, after reading the whole Ramayana, you want to know whose father Sita is? You know this? This question is ludicrous. Since Sita is Lord Rama's wife, and thus such a query will naturally invite quips and laughter, we find the same absurdity in Dr. Radhakrishnan's English commentary on the Gita. He writes that we do not have to surrender to the person Krishna, but to unborn, beginningless, eternal within Krishna. This implies that Lord Krishna and his inner self are two separate identities. According to Dr. Radhakrishnan, since there is a difference between Krishna's body and his soul, we must surrender to Krishna's soul and not his body. This new discovery in the field of religious philosophy reminds us of the Pandita of the Ramayana referred to above. Lord Sri Krishna's sole purpose in speaking the Bhagavad Gita is to convince us to surrender to his lotus feet. Yet at the outset, Dr. Radhakrishnan is unwilling to accept this point. Lord Krishna gives a central instruction in Bhagavad Gita 18.66, you know, Sarvadharmaan Parityajya Mamekam Sharanam Vraja. Abandon all religious religion and just surrender unto me. Here comes a very interesting point, how Prabhupada argues here. Lord Krishna spoke these words to Arjuna so that he would surrender to him. The Sanskrit word Sharanam in this Gita text means surrender. On page 62 of his introductory essay, Dr. Radhakrishnan has also discussed the idea of surrender in some detail. He writes, Prapatti, surrender has the following accessories. So there he writes, Anukulyasa Sankalpa, meaning of that he writes, goodwill to all, he's writing. And Patikulyasa Varjanam, absence of ill will. And then third is Rakshasatiti Vishwasaha, faith that the Lord will protect. Gopatatve Varanam, resort to Lord as Savior. Karpanyam, a sense of utter helplessness. And Atmanikshepa, complete surrender. So he has given the meanings. So Prabhupada argues two things here about this definitions. These six limbs of surrender should be followed in relation to Krishna or Vishnu, because this instruction on the process of surrender appears in a Vaishnava scripture. Dr. Radhakrishnan has translated the first limb, Anukulyasa Sankalpa, as goodwill to all. Our question is it possible to surrender to everyone? Surrender should be directed towards the Supreme Lord alone. Dr. Radhakrishnan's proposal is impractical and indeed impossible. Long before Dr. Radhakrishnan wrote his commentary, many realized spiritual preceptors, including the famous Goswamis of Vrindavan, explained that the words Anukulyasa Sankalpa mean that one should render transcendental loving service to Supreme Lord Krishna favorably. No genuine scholar would be willing to disregard all other spiritual authorities like Goswamis and accept Dr. Radhakrishnan's version. When Dr. Radhakrishnan uses the word faith in the Lord, he definitely refers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By what logic does he say Lord, but mean the impersonal Brahman? Arjuna certainly means the person Krishna when he says in 2.7, Shishyasteham Shadimam Tvam Prapannam. Now I am your disciple and a soul surrender unto you, please instruct me. With these words he addresses Krishna at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. At this stage of Gita, the impersonal Brahman is still to be discussed. When the subject of impersonal Brahman is finally raised, Lord Krishna unequivocally declares that he is the source of impersonal Brahman. Sound logic says that one cannot surrender to something impersonal and formless. Those who are overly attached to the impersonal Brahman will find surrendering to this formless concept very painful and indeed impossible. And if they persist along this path, they will end up surrendering to their wife, family and relatives. So I read out the whole thing, but we learned many valuable lessons from this commentary of Prabhupada. One is, as here Arjuna says, I accept the truth totally. But there are people who do not accept Lord Krishna's words totally, but they interpret, like Prabhupada says here. On one hand, he is saying goodwill to all. That's why these people, their philosophy is be good and do good to everyone. Don't criticize anybody, don't harm anybody, and don't say don't do anything. You can do anything you want. Like there are so many Hindus in India and abroad who claim to be Hindus, following some kind of philosophy. At home they celebrate, you know, Saraswati Puja, Lakshmi Puja, Ganesh, Chaturthi, Janmashtami. Once in a year they may celebrate these things. But they hardly have any understanding of the real religious principles. If you criticize Mayavadis, they will say, no, don't talk ill of anybody. He's also good. Somebody claims to be God, he's also good. Somebody is cheating the public, he's also good, no problem. He's Swamiji, you should not tell anything bad. So everyone, goodwill to all. Goodwill to all kinds of people. In fact, Bhagavatam very strongly condemns Shvavidu Varahashtra Karehi Samstuta Purusha Pashu. It says, there are dogs, hogs, camels and asses, like people, it talks about, who choose another dog, hog, camel and ass as a leader, and they become their followers. Bhagavatam says like that. So Bhagavatam is, Pibata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam, and in that Rasamalayam only you find this verse. Yeah, Bhagavatam is like a transcendental nectar. But in that you also find chastisements like this, where it condemns people who deserve to be condemned. So we cannot, in the name of being good to everyone, we cannot pat on the back of anybody who claims to be God or calls everyone as God or proposes some foolish concept to be the ultimate religion, being goodwill to all. Like Prabhupada says, how can one surrender to everybody? Or is it necessary that one surrenders to all fallen souls and not fallen souls, exalted souls, everyone? So while writing goodwill to all there, the third point he writes, what he writes? Rakshasatiti Vishwaso, there he writes, having complete faith in the Lord. What does that Lord mean? So this is the Mayavadi books you will find many places. They use the word Lord very freely, everywhere. So whenever they need to talk about shelter, surrender, they talk about Lord. And then whenever they want to poke their nose and give a comment, then they will say, this Lord is simply, a form that is temporarily accepted. You have to concentrate on something and unbond within the Lord, or you can accept any form of the Lord. So there is no chastity here. You can accept anybody and everybody to be God. That is why this kind of motivated interpretations, they don't lead us anywhere. See, the second thing I was telling about deletion, this deletion has such an important connection to interpretation also. For example, in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says about Anya Devata. He talks about Anya Devata. The word Anya Devata is very clearly mentioned. My dear Arjun, there are some people who surrender to me, and there are people who don't surrender to me, they surrender to Anya Devata, he says, to other gods. Very, very clear. And Krishna says that they go to the other gods. Why? Because they want some material benefits in return. Tad bhavati alpamedasam kamais taiste hrita jnana prapadyante anya devata tam tam niyama mastaya prakritya aniyata svaya. And then he also tells what will be their destination. He says that devan deve ajo yanti mad bhakta yanti mamapi. Those who worship the devatas will go to devatas. Those who worship me will come to me. Now, how will they interpret these verses? I had about 4 or 5 volumes of Mayavadi Bhagavad Gita editions. They write only the translations and keep chup-chup, no commentary for this. Don't comment about them. Just give the translation and proceed ahead. And if you very much insist and ask them, we want to know what is this commentary, then they will say, you see, Gita Upanishad is such a Upanishad which encompasses Puranas also, you know, Upanishads also, Smritis and Shruti, Vedas, everything. It's like a quintessence of, you know, all the Vedic literatures. So these are all like, you know, for those who are believers of Purana, for them these things are given. Ah, Brahma Bhuvana Loka Punaravartino Arjuna. So Krishna quotes Brahma Loka, which means heaven and hell are not myths. Heaven and hell exist. Krishna talks about Ah, Brahma Bhuvana Loka Punaravartino Arjuna. Even he talks about Tetam Bhuktva Swarga Lokam Vishalam Shine Punye Martha Lokam Vishanti. So these are not myths. Heavens are existing, demigods are existing, and all these different planets are existing, and whenever there is a cosmic disturbance, all the demigods go to Brahma, and Brahma takes them to Vishnu. So these are all not some mythological treatise made in the Puranas, which are not true. If you accept Bhagavad Gita to be true, word of God, then you have to accept it in totality. You can't accept it in bits and pieces. Some section, when you talk about Nayanam, Chindanti, Shastrani, then Mayavadis will be very alert. Yes, very good. You know, between 2.13 to 2.27, very nice. He talks about how the soul is, you know, different from the body. It cannot be burned by air, burned by fire, you know, dried by air, it can be wetted by water, it can be cut by weapons. So when you talk about the soul and Sankhya, they may be very awakened, very interested. But when he talks about the Puranic facts in Bhagavad Gita, then they try to dismiss them as, you know, not so important. Whether it is important or not is another question. The first question is whether it is true or not. We can challenge that. Why Krishna says Anya Devata? Somebody other than himself. If Krishna is also one among the devatas, then what is the meaning of Anya Devata? Why should he say like that? So, the Puranas talk these things, and they are in Bhagavad Gita also. Bhagavad Gita talks about heaven, it talks about hell, it talks about beyond that, it talks about transcendence, it talks about spiritual world. Tad dhama paramam mama, he says, natad basiti suryo nashashanko napavakah yad gatvara nivartante tad dhama paramam mama. He says there is a dham beyond this. Yasya sarveshu bhuteshu nashyatsu na vinashyati. When all this is destroyed, that spiritual world is not destroyed. So Krishna doesn't say, of course there is a verse, Om ityekaksharam brahma vyaharan ma manusmaran ya prayati sa tajan deham. So he is talking about the yogis also. They also achieve the Brahma Jyoti, which is beyond this world. So there is a talk about Brahma Jyoti, there is talk about spiritual world, Vaikuntha planets. So if you take the totality of Bhagavad Gita, then one has to become a bhakta yogi. One has to surrender to Krishna, which they don't want to do. And Prabhupada writes elsewhere that they have an inner hatred towards the personality of Godhead in their heart. And that hatred does not allow them to accept the total truth. That prevents them from accepting the truth in totality. So they accept it in bits and pieces. That's why it's called as Ardha Kukuta Nyaya. You accept the half hen truth. cut the second half of the hen so that you can get all the golden eggs in one day. Like that. But as soon as you cut the hen into two, finished. The meaning is finished. That is why there are hundreds of commentaries of Bhagavad Gita which are lying in the libraries, dust covered. And they are not taking effect in the lives of people. And they would never do. Because the Bhagavad Gita's were not written repeating what Krishna wanted to say. And they have suppressed the meaning what Krishna wanted to say, and they have given their own concocted meaning, their own interpretation, and deleted many things that Krishna says and try to present something of their own. So that should be, that's why actually Prabhupada is the one who warns us like this. Otherwise we would have been cheated long ago. We may be doing something in the name of religion, but actually you won't get that, get to that ultimate stage of Ananya Bhakti, which Krishna is speaking about in Bhagavad Gita. Not one or two, many verses. Ananya Chetaha Satatam Yomam Smarati Nityashah Tasyaham Sulabha Partha Nitya Yuktasya Yoginah Ananyas Chintayantoma Yejana Paryupasate Tesham Nitya Abhiyuktanam Yogakshemam Bahamyakam Mayi Chananya Yogena Bhakti Ravyapicharini Vivikta Desha Sevitvam. Aratirajana Samsutari says Mayi Chananya Yogena. Ananya word is used in many, many places in Bhagavad Gita. So many shlokas. So that is actually the goal which is not emphasized by them. So they slip through those verses and try to just emphasize on this dry philosophy of impersonalism. So this is owing to their own motivated interpretations. Interpretation and deletion. Accepting some of the things and not accepting the others. What is the difficulty in accepting? If they accept that there are heaven and hell, there are demigods, then the Puranas are also true. And the Puranas talk of many pastimes, fight between demigods and demons, Indra, Chandra, Varuna, Vayu, and so many things, which the impersonalists may have difficulty accepting. Recently, one of our boys from IIT, he went to Bangalore for training. So he was in IISA Bangalore, and so he wrote a mail to me saying that Prabhuji, I came to Bangalore here, and you know, in our institute boys are speaking so many things which is very confusing to me. I learned some things in ISKCON, and here I am coming and they are speaking something else. It's totally confusing to me. I want to know. Then he asked him, write to me exactly what's your confusion. Then he told me that the boys there in IISA Bangalore, IISA, you all know, IISA is one of the world ranking institutes in research in science. It's 12th, I think 10th or 12th rank in the world, one of the best ranking institutes. So he said, here some of my friends, they showed me a planetarium with so many different planets and stars and moon and so many different things like that. And they also have a Vedic model. Similarly, they showed me how the life forms come according to Darwin's evolution theory. And they also have a model of the Vedic theory, how the life forms originate and how they evolve into different forms. They have Vedic theory also. And here they have a model of Big Bang theory, how the universe originated. And they also have a Vedic theory of how the Vishnu creates Brahma and everything. So they showed him all this. And then he asked them, out of this, which do you believe? He asked them. They said, we believe in neither, they said. They said, you know, the Vedic theory, when we read, it is too fantastic for us to believe. You know, we have not seen Brahma, we have not seen Indra, Chandra and all these personalities. These are, you know, just mind-boggling to us. And as far as the scientific theory is concerned, we know that they are not true. By our research, they said so many theories have been proposed one after another. Although we have made all these models and we kept here, but we have no confidence in them. None of them is true. They are ready to find out. Then he asked them, then where are you going to put your faith? And they said, no, we can't put faith anywhere. We can't put faith in science also, we can't put faith in the Vedas also, and we have to just live like this. Then he asked them, what is the goal of your life? And they just couldn't say anything. We don't know. Someday we'll find out, they were saying. So, this is the case of agnostic. Now, one devotee asked Prabhupada, Swamiji, is doubts allowed in your society? Or doubts allowed in your society? Can somebody ask doubts? And Prabhupada understood his mood. Generally, sometimes Prabhupada would not answer the question, but he would answer the question based on the mood of the question with which a person is asking. And Prabhupada saw that this person is such a doubting person that he doesn't have faith in anything. So Prabhupada told him, your problem is that you never want to accept Krishna. So you are like a dog's tail, Prabhupada said. Even if you put a pipe in the dog's tail, as soon as you remove the pipe, immediately the dog's tail will be like this. Now, even Prabhupada said, even if you put this pipe for 12 years and remove it after 12 years again, the tail will go like this. That's the nature of the dog's tail. But Prabhupada said, if you really want to understand Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada said, the very first step is, he said, let Krishna be God. You make that assumption, he said. Just like we say, no, let delta x, no, and tend to infinity or something like that. You make assumption in the beginning in mathematics. Prabhupada said, let Krishna be God. You make. And then Prabhupada said, that assumption is not a blind, baseless assumption. It's a meaningful assumption, because people and personalities much greater than you have accepted, like Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Shankaracharya, great personalities are glorifying Krishna and his devotees, gopis, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Shukadeva Goswami has spoken 18,000 verses in Srimad Bhagavatam. And the sages of Naimisharanya are hearing from Suta Goswami, the Katha of Bhagavat. If you consider all of them to be fools and you to be a better person, then you don't need to accept. But based on the acceptance of all these people, you make this first assumption. And then Prabhupada said, after you assume this and then you execute devotion service and you read Bhagavad Gita, everything will make sense. That is why Krishna says, Bhakto sime sakha cheti rahasyam hetaduttamam, he says. Because you are my friend and you are my devotee, this great rahasya of Bhagavad Gita will become revealed to you. Otherwise not. Otherwise it won't be revealed. People sometimes get a question, should I first know the things and then bow my head? Or should I bow my head first and then I will come to know? This is a big tussle going on in many people's minds. Which should one do first? Not only in Bhagavad Gita, in all the scriptures, if you see, whether it is Bible or Quran or Bhagavad Gita or any scripture, every scripture demands at least a bit of initial faith. Without humility, without initial faith in God and His supremacy and His greatness, no one can even make 1 inch progress towards God. Because when we think, I know better than everyone, like one professor came to Prabhupada, in those days Ravindra Surapru was studying in a college, he was doing his BA, MA philosophy. So after he graduated, he used to bring professors one by one to Prabhupada, to meet Prabhupada and to discuss with him. So he told, there is one professor of Hindu philosophy who is now researching on the widest philosophy of Buddhist, and he also gives hundreds of lectures on Mayavad philosophy. So Ramindra Prabhu had brought him to Prabhupada. So Prabhupada, in his conversation, they were talking, and he asked, Prabhupada asked him, you are a professor of Hindu philosophy, so what is Hinduism? What do you think about Hinduism? What is the conclusion of Hinduism? And that person said, Swamiji, why don't you say? He asked Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, you claim to be a professor of Hindu philosophy and you are teaching it, then why don't you say? Prabhupada asked him like that. And that person was again counter questioning. And Prabhupada said, okay, let me tell you, if you want to hear from me, I'll tell you. The conclusion of our religion is Sarva Dharmaan Parityajya Mamekam Sharanam Braja. So just surrender to me, Krishna says. If you surrender to me, I will deliver you from all different type of sins. Do not worry. This is the conclusion, Prabhupada said. That person asked, but what does this word surrender mean? He asked. Then Prabhupada said, you don't know the meaning of the word surrender. And you say that you are a professor teaching Hindu philosophy. And he said, no, I want to know the etymological meaning, the dictionary meaning of this word, surrender. And Prabhupada said, Father, you have to go to a Sanskrit scholar, not come to me. If you just want to know the meaning of this word, why do you come and ask me? If you want to know the mood of this word, then you ask me. When you come to a guru, you don't challenge guru, you don't ask, what do you know? One has to submit to a guru, only then one can understand in this way. So, Prabhupada met not one or two, Prabhupada met many, many people like this in those times. And then Prabhupada also met professors who came to him and who admitted what Prabhupada said. Like the next professor who came from the same university, and he was talking to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was telling him the same point. So that person was asking Prabhupada about Vitthal Bhagavan, whether Vitthal is Krishna. Prabhupada said Vitthal is actually Vishnu, is a Vishnu form. And then he asked also whether, now whom do we accept? What about Shiva? What about the position of Shiva, Brahma and everyone? And Prabhupada was talking to him about unique position of Krishna, and he accepted. And he said, Swamiji, what you are saying is not new to me. Because even Ramanuja, even Madhva, even the great acharyas in the past have established the same thing what you are teaching. And Prabhupada was very pleased with them. So people, there were also professors who are broad-minded. But what we are talking about here is the kind of people who give some motivated interpretations. And to delete some portion and take what they want to take and what they don't want to take, they just leave it. Although it is true. But here you find Arjuna saying, Sarvam etat ritam manye. Sarva means all. All the truths, whatever you say, Krishna, I accept it as true. So Arjuna has no difficulty accepting. In our neophyte stage, we certainly have suspicion and doubts about whether all that you are hearing from the scripture is true. Because sometimes you hear from the scripture, it looks nice. And other times you get some doubts, oh, maybe this is not true. Maybe this is true. Especially when our devotional creeper is growing slowly, when you hear some certain things which appear to be contradicting, then it's like very big blow on our faith. It can be damaging to our faith. One time a disciple called Madhusudan Prabhu came to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, I have some doubts and I have been having these doubts for a long time. And Prabhupada immediately shouted at him. He said, why didn't you ask your doubts? Did you read my books? Did you chant Hare Krishna? Did you offer prayers to the Lord to clarify your doubts? Did you consult devotees? Then how can you keep the doubts to yourself? He asked him. So it is the duty of a disciple to ask the spiritual master or the superiors and clarify the doubt. Like you find Arjuna also, he tells Krishna, oh Madhusudana. Madhusudana means one who is a killer of demons. So you kill the demon of doubt in my heart. So one thing we understand from Arjuna's approach is that as a disciple, he is convinced of the truths. But whenever he gets doubts, Arjuna blames himself. Arjuna says that, Krishna, somehow or other I am so foolish that I can't understand this truth. You please clarify it to me. So you will find not only in Bhagavad Gita, throughout the scriptures you find this mood of the recipient, of the disciple. You don't find a challenging mood, because a challenging mood will hardly help one in the spiritual pursuit. Because the spiritual truths are all esoteric and they are transcendental and they are beyond the range of the senses. And arguments will have no end. It's not possible at all. Like I was telling you about this IISc Bangalore boys. They could reach no end. Neither could they put faith in scientists, nor could they put faith in religionists. And they are hung in between as agnostics. And they will never be able to come to a conclusion in their lives unless they surrender to somebody. Now, certainly the surrender should be done with very great care and attention. One cannot surrender to anybody and everybody blindly. One certainly should think deeply, just like when you buy a diamond from a shop. You just don't go to a shop and remove some 25 lakhs and give and buy a diamond. You don't buy a costly diamond like that, especially if you buy a very costly one. So you will first of all check the shop, which shop you are buying. You will ask some relatives or friends or businessmen who are very close to you. And even after going to that particular shop, you'll have some test to check the diamond, whether it is a glass or a diamond. Nowadays, many glass pieces look exactly like diamond. They have imitation diamonds now. So you will check that after testing it, if it is diamond. Even while buying it, when you are paying the money, you will ask for some warranty. 1 year or 2 year, you will ask some card, guarantee card from them. So we are very careful in buying such a small thing, even in something material in this world. So when we choose a guru, or when we choose an acharya, when we surrender to somebody, certainly we should do it thoughtfully. But in the name of being thoughtful, one cannot while away the whole life. One cannot spend the entire life saying that I am searching and I got nobody in this world. Jesus says that in Bible, doubting Thomas, he says, that doubting Thomas will never achieve any end in his life. Because he doubted anyone and everyone. So, in the Bhagavatam also it is said, even the great demigods and demons and the great men cannot ascertain the religious principles. It is not possible. Nasiddha mukhya asura manushya kutonu vidyadara charanadeha. It is said, this is said by Yamaraj. He is saying, dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam na ve vidhurishayo napi deva na siddha mukhya asura manushya kutonu vidyadara charanadeha. He says, and then he says, Svayambhu Narada Shambhu Kumara Kapila Manu Prahlado Janako Bhishma Balivraja Sakirvayam. So these are the 12 Mahajans given in the Bhagavatam. The list is given. If you want to know what are the real religious principles, dharma satatvam nihitam guhayam, the dharma sometimes is so deep, it is very difficult to know which is right dharma. A practical example is the situation of the Pandavas in the Asat Sabha of Duryodhana. See, they had removed their mukut, they had removed their crowns, they had loosened their hats, and they had removed their upper shawl, and they were all kneeling down, they were all sitting on the ground, all the Pandavas who were supposed to be kings of the whole earth. And here was Duryodhana, who had cheated them by gambling match, by employing his uncle Shakuni, and he is bringing their wife Draupadi in the middle of the court and humiliating her, and they are not able to stop him. So the principles of dharma are extremely subtle. To know dharma is on whose side, which is right and which is wrong. So in the Niti Shastra, we see there are so many dharmic principles given, and there are lower principles and higher principles, and one can break a lower one for the sake of a higher one also. So one has to be very learned and very read to know what is right. Like there is a story of a Brahmana who was taking a dip in a holy river, and that time a cow went running into his hermitage, and behind the cow after some time was butcher chasing the cow, and he asked this Brahmana taking bath, did you see a cow running in this direction? And the Brahmana was outwardly truthful. He would never tell a lie. And he didn't know. He was about to show the hand, and then he thought, if I show him the direction, then what will he do? He knows what he will do. He is carrying a big sword in his hand. He is going to cut the throat of the innocent cow. And he didn't know what to do. At last he showed the hand. He showed like that. Cow went in this direction. And in this way the butcher went there and killed the cow later on. So what was proper dharma to do? To show direction where the cow went was dharma. So what was the proper dharma to do? So actually, if he wanted to save the life of the cow, better he could have told a lie, isn't it? He could have said, I didn't see, or something like that. He didn't say. Of course, he gets the karma for that, because of making a cow die. In the next life, actually, it's a big story. It comes in the Puranas. I'll tell it briefly. In the next life, the Brahmana again becomes a Brahmana because of upkeeping the truth. Because he didn't tell a lie. He becomes a Brahmana again. And he is wandering from one place to another. So he goes to one village. And this cow becomes a woman in the next life. And this butcher, he becomes the woman's husband. So they are living in a house, and this Brahmana passing by, he comes to this particular house, and then he says, can I, rest here outside in the veranda for the night, and next day I can go, and next morning I'll get up and go. And they say, yes, no problem, you can relax. So resting in the middle of the night, this wife is coming out, and she's telling this Brahmana, oh Brahmana, you have a very beautiful body, come, let's both enjoy, let's go to the forest. And he's telling, oh, you are like my mother, you are wife of another man, how can you speak such words? I cannot even, simply by hearing these words from your mouth, I have become sinful, my body has become sinful, he says. I just don't want to even hear it. And he, Brahmana, cries, how can a woman speak like this? And she says, oh, you didn't fulfill my desire, just wait and see what I do. She goes inside and takes a knife and stabs her husband. and kills him. And that fellow is screaming and yelling and is falling on the ground. And immediately she also starts screaming and yelling and shouting, and all the village people come. And she tells them that this Brahmana has killed my husband. Yeah. And all people think, yeah, it's likely. This Brahmana killed my husband to enjoy me. Like that she puts it. And that fellow is already dead. And people think, yeah, it seems to be true. Generally people feel more sympathy for weaklings. So they immediately felt sympathy for her. And immediately the panchayat decided to cut off his hand with which he killed her husband. So they didn't want to kill him because he's Brahmana, but they cut off his hand, right hand. The Brahmana immediately left the village, and when he was going to the forest, he was weeping. See, I never broke the dharma at all, but just see how I'm getting this punishment. Why Lord is punishing me like this? He was wondering. Then in his dream he understood the whole thing. That because the very same hand he used to show the cow, isn't it? With that hand only he showed the direction which cow went. So that hand was cut off. So that impurity, bad karma was removed now by cutting off the hand. Similarly, he was the cause of the killing of the cow. So the very same cow became the cause of his punishment. And the cow killed the butcher. So she killed her husband, herself, like that. So anybody who kills cow will be killed by the same cow later. As Shastra says, they will be killed in future. So now the dharma is very, very, as I was telling, dharmasya tattvam nihitam guhayam. It is very, very subtle, principles of dharma. So how do we know which dharma to follow and what dharma not to follow? He says, mahajano yena gata sappanta. Just follow the footsteps of mahajans, you'll be protected. Like some devotee comes and asks, Prabhuji, my parents don't allow me to go to these classes, you know. What to do? If they know I am going to Hare Krishna class, they will finish me. They told me, don't go to temple, don't go to classes, you know, don't keep this mala, you know, like some muni or rishi of the old times, keeping a, you know, chanting mala, you know, at home. You know, you are young, you are such a young person, why do you want all this mala and everything? You know, don't go to the classes. But still those devotees come to classes. You know. So they say, can we tell lies to parents that I'm going to program? So what do you all think you should do? So you should follow in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj. Mahajano yena gata sappanta. So the Mahajanas, if you see, every one of the Mahajans, they teach us some principle which stands out from this world. Yeah, like your friend calls you to a movie, you can say, oh, I'm feeling severe headache. You know. And after the friend goes, you can sit and eat Bhagavatam very nicely. Yeah, we do that. So we tell a transcendental lie many times. Because if we don't tell, in the name of being a Satyavan, you know, I always tell truth, my dear friend, I don't like movies. Then you will become unpopular. And you will become a rejected person. If you have to live in society, one should learn the art of having a working relationship with people. You are not cunning, you are not diplomatic, but it is just the art of dealing with people intelligently for the sake of protecting your Krishna consciousness. Otherwise you can't protect. Everyone in society discourages you to go to God, but everyone encourages you to make more money. You make more money, we will also make more money. Let us all work hard and make more money. Let us enjoy this world. That is a signal given by everyone. You see your uncle comes to home, he tells the same thing. Your aunt comes, your dada, dadi, even nana, nani, all old people, everyone. They all give you the same advice. How to go for some new schemes. How to make money, how to multiply the money better. How to save money, how to escape from income tax. Everyone is talking about it. Is there anyone who tells you, gives a pat on the back and says, please go closer to God. Chant more rounds. Read Bhagavatam. Associate with devotees. Go back home, back to Godhead. How many people tell you that? Isn't it? You get any encouragement like that? Very rare. So, in the name of following dharma, if you tell those people that, you know, my mother and father tell me not to chant, so I won't chant. One boy did that. His parents told him, Prabhuji, I am very faithful to my parents. So my parents told me to give up, so I gave up chanting. Yeah. So very faithfully people give up chanting. Yeah. But they won't give up sense gratification like that, even if they are told to give. So we have to follow in the footsteps of the Mahajans. Like Prahlad Maharaj, how he protected his devotion service. Bali Maharaj, he disobeyed Shukracharya when he came to know that his guru is cheating him for the purpose of maintaining his remuneration. So he said, I will offer to Vishnu anyway. Nobody can stop me. He offered it, yeah. All of them, every one of them, Swayambhu, Narada, Shambhu, Kumara, Kapila, Manu, everyone you will see. Every one of them have something very unique in their pastime. So, dharma satatvam nihitam guhayam. The real dharma is hidden in the realizations of these great Mahajans. And the life of these Mahajans is explained in the Bhagavatam. So, we have to hear the lives of these great Mahajans from the mouths of great devotees and very carefully follow in their footsteps, how they lived, in what way they practiced Krishna consciousness. And we have to surrender to that. If you don't surrender, then we will never surrender and our whole life will go waste. We will never achieve anything tangible in life by remaining an agnostic. We have to have faith, like we say, the unseen can be absorbed by the seen. So God has given us some kind of clue about His existence, about His greatness, about His kindness and everything by the things that we are looking around us. Taking that clue, taking that little bit of Shraddha, then we have to look for the real principles of Dharma. And the real principles of Dharma are actually hidden in the lives of Mahajans. And when one practices, one will be able to surrender better and better and better. Like that, it is possible. So, here Arjuna has come to that point where he is not having some initial little faith, but he has got a total faith now. Because now, till now, what he has been hearing, if you see, in the second chapter when Krishna began speaking, he told him, Arjuna, you are a Kshatriya, so you should do your Kshatriya duty. Sadharma pavicha vyaksha na vikampita marhasi. You know, if you don't do Kshatriya duty, the whole world will laugh at you. Krishna so intelligently spoke. He told them, what will your enemies do? Kateshanti teveyam, sambhavitasya chakirtir, maranadidrichyate. For a Kshatriya, you know, ridicule is worse than death. They will all laugh at you. Your enemies thinking that Arjuna has put the bow down and he is now returning back. Probably he is afraid of our Akshavanis. We have more Akshavanis, 11 Akshavanis. So whole world will laugh at you that a Kshatriya is showing his back and walking back. So in this way Krishna pushed him to follow his Swadharma. And then when Krishna saw that Arjuna has understood, I am going to follow Swadharma. Then later on in third chapter Krishna says that, you know, Swadharma is all right, you can do a Swadharma, but actually I want you to surrender to me. You know, he tells that for the first time, he puts it in the third chapter, I think 30th verse, I think 30th or 31st. Mayi sarvani karmani sanyasya adhyatma chetasa nirashir nirmama bhutva yidyasva bhagadajvara. That's the first drop of bhakti that Krishna puts in Bhagavad Gita. He gives a clue that I don't want you to just do your prescribed duty, but you should do it in my consciousness. And actually you should be doing it because I am asking you to do, not because it is a prescribed duty. You should do it because this is what I want you to do. So Krishna says that. And then as he goes, in fourth chapter, he gives transcendental knowledge about his janma, karma, chamaya, divyam. He explains about himself. He explains about parampara. Then, if you see like that further, if you see the ends of chapter, like sixth chapter, he says, madgate nantaratmana shaddhavan bhajate yomam samayukta tamamata. And the sixth chapter onwards, the bhakti has begun. Full swing, it's a cream of Bhagavad Gita, 6th to 12th chapter. So, 6th, 7th, 8th and all Krishna was giving. And just now in this chapter, 10th chapter, Krishna has been explaining to Arjuna. In the beginning itself, he explained that verse about demigods. No demigods can know me. Buddhir jnana masam moha. Krishna very confidently says that nobody can know me, Arjuna. Because the buddhi with which they know me is also given by me only to them. So the very tool a person uses to know me is provided by me. Then, how can a person see me without my permission? That means Krishna says, it's me who gives them permission to see me, like that. But I can see all of them, but no one can see me unless I give permission to see. You were telling the example of the sun, isn't it? Sun has to give us the light for us to be able to see the sun, isn't it? We use the sunlight to see the sun. Similarly, Lord has to give His mercy for us to be able to see Him. So Arjuna has been hearing all that. And then Krishna said, Aham sarvasya prabhava matta sarvam pravartate. Everything emanates from me. Iti matva bhajante maam. And the devotees who know this, they immediately engage in my devotional service. And then he spoke this, Chatushloki. In that he talked about the nature of devotees in devotional service. Already he spoke about many of this in the 9th chapter. But here he talks even more intimately in this Chatushloki. When Arjuna heard all these things, all his doubts are vanquished. There is not even a bit of doubt. If you see the 9th chapter, Arjuna is asking some questions to Krishna there. Like we were explaining about this. Sadureva samantavya samyak vavasito hisa, isn't it? Like, you know, Krishna is telling, my dear Arjun, even if my devotee, such a devotee of mine, who is my Ananya Bhakta, who is my very dear devotee, he commits some fault accidentally, there is no problem. I still see him as a sadhu. But then Arjuna had a question, how can, maybe you are calling him a sadhu, Krishna, because they are all your devotees, but how will the world look at such a person? If somebody has performed sin, how can he be called a sadhu? So we explained that last time, isn't it? We were discussing about it, how the conversation goes. And then Krishna says, no, Arjuna, don't worry. Such a devotee of mine will immediately repent. Alas, alas, what a great blunder I have done. I have ruined the good name of my Lord. I have ruined the good name of the Vaishnavas. Being in the Vaishnava society, I have committed such a blunder. And such a shame upon me. So such a devotee sincerely repents, tears. And in those tears, all his sins are washed away. In that way, he becomes Chipram Bhavati Dharmatma Shashvat Chantim Nagachati. He immediately becomes purified, Arjuna. But then Arjuna was asking, what if Krishna, if they don't become purified? And Krishna became angry. He said, why do you ask such a question, Arjuna? How can he not become purified? And then he said, Kaunteya Pratijani Name Bhakta Pranashi. He said, no, don't ask such a question. I will protect my devotee. Krishna said like that. You take the drums and symbols and everything, go out. And you go and declare to the whole world that my devotee never perishes. My devotee is always protected. So in this way, Arjuna was in a mood of asking question and answer and all in the previous chapter. In the 9th chapter we saw. But here we find he has crossed that stage of questioning. He has asked sufficient questions. Now he is very satisfied with Krishna's answers. And he has understood the value of becoming a devotee. How wonderful it is to be a devotee. Already Krishna told him, Tasyaham Sulabha Partha Nitya Yuktasya Yoginaha. By devotion service, one can very easily achieve me. He said that. And in the 8th chapter, last section, he said, Vedeshu Yajneshu Tapasu Chaiva Daneshu Yatpunya Phalam Pradishtam. There Krishna said, my devotee is not bereft of the benefits achieved by a Karmakandi or by a Yogi or by a Jnani. All the benefits are included in one package for my devotee. When one becomes my devotee, he doesn't have to worry about anything. He gets everything. So, in this way, Arjuna has got an all-around understanding about being a devotee, how wonderful it is. And even if such a devotee accidentally commits mistake, now Arjuna understood the mind of the Lord. How Krishna has such a thick compact of love for his devotee. And Arjuna has already started appreciating that. And here in the beginning of 10th chapter we find, when he heard the Chatushloki, Bhagavad Gita, which very intimately describes the nature of Lord, the nature of devotee and their dealings. Then Arjuna here very confidently speaks these verses, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, Param Bhavan. You see, at this stage he has not yet seen the universal form. Arjuna has not seen the universal form at all. Still he is telling Krishna, you are the Parabrahma, you are the Param Dham, Pavitram, Param Bhavan, with this knowledge itself. And here he is saying, Sarvameta Dritam Manye, Enma Madhusikeshwa. That's why we can understand that Arjuna's request to Krishna for showing the universal form is not for his benefit, but for the faithless people. Those who have suspicion whether Krishna could be God or Krishna is not God. For them he told Krishna to show the Vishwarupa Darshan later. But here he is saying, Sarvametad Ritam Manye Enma Madhusikeshwa. So one should accept Krishna in this mood, accepting the truths in totality. We have to come to this stage. Once Prabhupada was asking a group of senior members of GBC, do you have firm faith that Krishna is God? Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he looked into the eyes of every one of them. So they were all looking at one another. Of course, we have some kind of faith, rudimentary faith we have. But we haven't come to the point of having a deep faith in Krishna. Krishna is a person who is watching us, who is guiding us, who is nourishing us, who is protecting us, who is constantly escorting us in every situation in our life, morning to night, who is constantly witnessing our activities, who is blessing us, benedicting us. We don't have that complete faith. So if you don't have the complete faith, then how are we engaged in devotional service? That is because we have faith in devotees. We have faith in many of the devotees who are practicing Krishna consciousness, and we have love for devotees, and our mind constantly compares. When you come to devotees, how you feel? When you go to the material world, how you feel? And you are able to clearly see such a difference. In the devotee circle, what you feel, and non-devotee circle, what you feel. And then we develop some kind of faith in the process. But then the devilish mind always remains. It doesn't go away totally. It always arouses suspicion time to time, and bringing up doubts. But after hearing this verse, we can put ourselves in a particular platform where we can say to ourselves that the scriptures cannot be false. The scriptures are all word of God. They have to be true. But with my limited senses and limited mind and perception, with which I am trying to see and understand these truths, I may not be able to capture the truths. So if I can't understand something today, I will patiently wait and pray to Krishna that someday this inconceivable truth will become conceivable to me. If you will, if you want me to understand it, it will become understandable. So this should be the mood of a devotee. Even in devotee's life, so many things happen. Sometimes we are surprised, how can this thing happen to that devotee? How can that devotee suffer like this, from this disease or from this illness or from accident or from death or something like that? So we have to always give a benefit of doubt to Krishna. The Lord is very great and He is inconceivable, and I am extremely tiny. I am insignificant to understand what is Lord's plan. I am always seeing only the present isolated from past and future. I can't see the past or future, I can only see the present. And I am trying to interpret about the truth based on this limited understanding. Just like, you know, one famous author, he said this. About knowledge, he said this. Imagine, say there is a wall, that wall, if there is a hole, not a thick wall, but say in a playground they make a wall, with thin sheet, they make a wall and there is a hole there. So if I see from here, how much knowledge will I have about the playground? See, this hole is only this much hole, and I am seeing the hole there. So when I am seeing from here, how much can I know the truth? I can only very limited. Maybe occasionally I may see a bat, you know, through that hole. Sometimes I may see a ball passing by. Sometimes I may hear some sounds coming from there. I exactly don't know what's happening on the other side. Bits of truths, bits and pieces I understand from here. But if I go a little bit closer, more and more and more closer, and when I go very close like this and I see through the hole, I can see everything, isn't it? When I see through the hole, then I can see, you know, there is a bowler, there is a batsman, there are so many people surrounding, and there's a big stadium and thousands of people are sitting, you know. You can see everything from that. From distance you can't see like that. Similarly, absolute truth also, in our stage, we can't try to capture it. It's not possible. We may know a little bit. Sometimes you hear some, you know, nice Vaishnava song, it pleases you very much. Sometimes you hear some nice philosophical point, it touches your heart. Someday you chant Hare Krishna, you felt very nice. Sometimes you went for yatra, you felt nice. Other times in the same yatra, you're feeling too hungry. You lost your chappals, you become frustrated. Isn't it? Some devotee scolded you. Then you think the whole Krishna consciousness movement is bad. You thought like that. ISKCON people are like this only. You are also ISKCON person. You say ISKCON people are bad. Isn't it? How foolish mind is here. Sometimes your mind. So we are put in a wave. A wave of sometimes happiness, sometimes distress, because we are neophytes. But when we go closer and closer, the absolute truth will reveal itself depending on our surrender. And like Arjuna is surrendering more and Krishna is giving him more. And Arjuna surrenders more and Krishna gives him more. In this way, Arjuna becomes more and more enlightened. And the truth is becoming revealed to him. And as the truth becomes revealed, Arjuna's ecstasy is increasing. You will find the next verse what he is going to ask in the next coming week. Katam vidyam aham sanket tvam sada parichintayan keshu keshu cha bhaveshu chintyosi bhagavan. He'll be asking in the subsequent verses in one place. Now he is convinced. He says, Krishna, I am completely satisfied. But still, your glories are so great and they are so pleasing to heart that I am not at all satiated. I want to go on hearing your glories more and more and more. So you tell me, how can a common person see you everywhere and in everything? How can they always remember you all day? Morning to night, from the time we get up till we retire to bed, how can we always remember Krishna? So please tell us some ideas. That is why this chapter is entitled Opulences of the Absolute. So this is actually the result of faith. When one has got the Shraddha, then from the question a person asks, we can understand the Shraddha of the person. When Krishna says all these things, even after saying all these things, a person may not have faith. So there are five disqualifications of a disciple. I will discuss about them briefly, which are not appreciated in a disciple. One is the duplicity. The nature of duplicity is to make simple things more complex. Like you can touch the nose like this, but you touch the nose, try to touch the nose like this, with great difficulty. So one may become duplicitous. That means one is not straightforward. One has some hidden agendas. Or one has hidden agenda means you are coming to the moment with some ulterior motives. Or you are doing your services with some ulterior motives. For example, one of the qualities that a spiritualist should have is called as asteya. Asteya means non-stealing tendency, which means we should not steal the credit of somebody else's good activity. If somebody else has done a good thing and you claim that you did it and you take the good name, like, you know, there were two mathematics professors in one big institute, very famous world institute. So one of them did all the research and the other person took those research and published in an international magazine. So the first person committed suicide. He lost his good name. So this is called as plagiarism, they call it in English. Plagiarism means like totally copying something and, you know, claiming that I have done it like that. One should put reference, one has taken from this reference like that. So that is also coming under duplicity. In the same way, in our rendering services, sometimes we may try to take credit for a service that is done by somebody else. Or we may do services with a material motive, which means we may think that, you know, if I do this service, you know, I will get promotion, I will become recognized, or I will become known to people, or I can capture the limelight, I will get an opportunity. Like, you know, some people are very fond of being in the front, the limelight, in front of 500 people, 1000 people, 2000 people. They want, even if they don't know anything, they want to say something. Like, you know, we had some big program in one place. So one gentleman had come for the program and he came to stage and asked, can I also say some few words? I gave a lecture there. After I finished, I asked, what are you going to say? Maybe I can say some words on Bhagavad Gita, he said. Bhagavad Gita, have you studied Bhagavad Gita? Yeah, we have Bhagavad Gita at home in our house. And I asked him, who are you? Then he said, no, I give speeches on any topic that people request to me. I can talk on any topic, understand. You give me notes, no, you give me some points, and I can very powerfully convey it to people, he was telling. I said, this stage is not meant for that. I told him, we will do another time. So I got him down. So some people are very fond of capturing, because they think, oh, so many people. Like here once I was giving a lecture, one boy had come from, one elderly boy, he was about 28 years old. So he came to me at the end of the class and, sir, I have a question for you, he told me. And he looked around and nobody was there, so he asked me, what is the question? Sir, I wanted to learn from you how to, you know, keep the audience spellbound. You know, I am seeing that, you know, people are allowing you to sit here in this place and you are speaking and they are hearing from you. So I also want to, you know, develop this self-confidence and, you know, speak in front of many people. Then I told him, okay, you keep coming for this lecture, one day we will give you opportunity to speak also. Some time will come and you can also speak. Because, you know, even if somebody comes with an impure motive, if you encourage them, at a later time Krishna will purify their motive and they will laugh at themselves. What a fool I was one day. Like that. So people come with some ulterior duplicitous motive like that. So duplicity means coming to Guru or coming to the society with another program in mind. Second quality is hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is actually fully blown duplicity. That is called as hypocrisy. It's more prominently manifest. So this is an ongoing cheating. It is not just once in a while cheating. Hypocrisy means a steady well planned, determined program for cheating. That is hypocrisy. One knows what one is doing, one is very clear, and one is determined that this is what I am going to do, and one is convinced about it. Actually, one who is a hypocrite, Krishna uses this word hypocrite in Bhagavad Gita also, he says, Mithyacharasa Uchyate. Karmendriyani Samyamya Yaste Manasasmaran Indriyatman Vimudatma Mithyacharasa Uchyate. He says that, you know, externally one may Karmendriyani Samyamya, appearing to be controlling the senses, but in the mind he is contemplating on sense objects. And such a person is a Mithyachari, he is saying. So those sense objects may be many things. One who is a spiritualist, like all of us, we all are spiritualists. We have to lead a very pure life, free from, I won't say free from temptation. Temptation will surely come. Free from falling down. We should not fall down, prey to temptations. We should not succumb to temptations. As spiritualists, we have to set a very high standard. But hypocrite is one who puts a show in front of devotees, wears tilak, kantimala, you know, wears dhoti kurta or sari, like a nice devotee. And then behind the back, does things which are not befitting a devotee. Or one may be thinking that if I get this post, if I get that position, using that position and power, I can exploit people. I can get followers. See, sometimes people from material circle, they give up material circle and come into spiritual circle. And they create a lot of problem in spiritual society. Like I was selling in one of the temples in ISKCON. There's nothing to hide, our Bangalore temple. Like if you see, so much lakhs and crores of rupees are invested there. But when people are posted in big positions, now taking undue advantage of their position and money that they have, they may propose wrong philosophies and they may misguide their followers and try to take on a position and become hypocritical, going against the purpose for which an acharya has created a movement like that. So this is called as hypocrisy. And this will cause damage to them and damage to so many people who are following them. So a devotee should give up this dangerous hypocritical behavior. Yeah, he's saying hypocrisy means you acquire that position where you get all the facilities that come from that position, but you don't do the tapasya or sacrifice required for that position. That is called as hypocrisy. Such a sharp definition. It's like hitting the nail definition. Very beautiful. That means we acquire a position and we get all the facilities and we enjoy the facilities, but we don't do the sacrifice needed for that position. That is hypocritical. As you go higher and higher, more and more is expected of us. The purity and the standard that people expect, it's very, very great demand. Outside people also expect and devotees also expect. So thirdly, unfaithful. Unfaithful means he does not have full faith in scriptures. Our whole process of Krishna consciousness is based on great faith. If you don't have faith, then we can't make progress. Faith is very much required. So, you know, once Prabhupada himself gives his example. Once he saw his spiritual master Bhagavan Sarathu was telling some of the sannyasis that, you kill that scorpion. And Prabhupada is wondering, snake, kill that snake, yeah. So Prabhupada is wondering how he is a sannyasi, he is telling them to kill a snake. A sannyasi should be equipoised. You should see everyone has a soul. You should be a samadarshi. But how can he tell someone to kill a snake? But later on Prabhupada says, when he read Bhagavatam, he read this verse. Prahlada Maharaj says, Modeta Sadurapi Vrishika Sarpahatya. There is one verse. What is the first line of that? Modeta Sadurapi Vrishika Sarpahatya. This is spoken by Prahlad. Prahlad is saying, Modeta means pleasure. A saintly person becomes joyful even when a Vrishika or a sarpa is killed, he says. So when a demon like Hiranyakashipu is killed, great devotees become joyful. Why they become joyful? Not that this fellow really suffered, very nice, not like that. That the irreligion is destroyed and the Brahminical culture is re-established. Like, you know, in South India they have this Diwali, Narakasur died. So they put all this crackers and everything, firecrackers they put. You know, some materialistic people ask, that means you people are very happy that this asura died, that means they want to be like the asura, I think. So they ask. We used to say, yes, we are happy that asura died, Lord came and killed the asura, so very happy. Some people say, you know, one fellow wrote a book called Ravana Kavyam, you know. So he said, I am on side of Ravana. I like Ravana more than Ram. So those who are like tiny Ravanas, they will certainly like Ravanas. Undoubtedly. So the idea of Modeta is that when a demon is killed, along with that the demoniac principles are also destroyed. And pure Krishna conscious principles are established by that. Similarly, a serpent or a scorpion may bite a saintly person or anybody, and they may cause such damage to human beings that human being will lose the opportunity to become Krishna conscious. So even a saintly person derives joy when such venomous elements are killed like that. So why I got this example, sometimes we may hear things which are difficult to accept for us, but if you read the Shastras regularly, at one time they will become acceptable to us and understandable to us. It will happen. So a devotee should go on increasing the faith. So Prabhupada says, I didn't express the doubt that time, but later on Krishna gave me the knowledge to see this verse and I saw it and I became convinced that this is true. So if you have doubts, we lose our enthusiasm and we fall down. So we have to deal with the doubts whenever we get doubts. Of course, you have to ask your doubts to people who have that stability and maturity, that they can clarify the doubt. If you go and ask somebody who is already a weakling, he will get more bewildered. So we should not harbor doubts in the heart, because they will become like a cancer, and gradually our lack of faith will increase more and more. And the fourth is familiarity. So the spiritual master is like a father who shows concern, love, affection, friendliness, such qualities. So sometimes the spiritual master may pat us on the back, he may show friendliness, he may show affection, he shows love. But one should not become overly familiar. Especially two people, it is said, a pujari and a personal servant. These two people can become very close to guru and deities. And because of undue familiarity, they may start committing offenses. Like they may start seeing guru from a material viewpoint. They may think that he is also like any ordinary person. Or they may see deities to be ordinary, stone or brass. So they may not be able to appreciate the transcendental nature of the deity or guru. So that familiarity also is one disqualification. So even amongst devotees, there has to be respect mixed with love. When Prabhupada started this Dallas, Texas Gurukula, so the very first few days he had gone at the Gurukula to see the children and the teachers, and there was a big crowd in the classroom, everyone was present, and Prabhupada was talking to them, and Prabhupada told the teachers privately that you should train the children in such a way that they should have fear mixed with love for the teacher. You should show the stick but not beat them, he said, otherwise they will never get trained. Discipline is very important. They should have fear mixed with love. In spiritual life, with our superiors, with our shiksha gurus, that is the kind of relationship that is appreciated. We should have some kind of fear that, you know, if I go wrong, I will be chastised. At the same time, we should have love. It is not like authoritarian military relationship where you know, everyone is holding a gun. It's not like that. There should be fear, at the same time there should be love also. That's a good platform. But sometimes people, because of the Western culture, now many people think that, you know, we can be equal, now we can treat like equal, there should be no difference, everyone is same, you know, you deal like a friend. Then what happens in that, especially in crisis situations where there should be one person who makes decision and everyone hears in a small team of people, then one will not hear actually. The Shastras give certain injunctions for everyone's benefit like that. So the dealings. So Prabhupada was talking to them, he took two stick in hand. So he said, this stick, he said, this is good for, you know, beating on the head. Actually, he was telling in front of children. Children were all sitting. And this other stick, he said, this is good for beating on the hand, he said. And he asked, how many of you want beating now? He asked. And everyone came forward, all children and all the teachers. They were all showing their head. Prabhupada beat us, you know. And Prabhupada gave a playful pat on the back of their heads and he told them. So he taught them that fear mixed with love, that type of relation. So we should not become unduly familiar with spiritual master. And lastly, disrespect. Yeah. So one should not show any disrespect for spiritual master. Like we hear from the Ramachandra Puri's example. So generally, as far as I know in ISKCON society, this point I sometimes feel there is no need of explaining about this point. Because people have respect for gurus more than what we want them to have. Such a awe and reverence, and you know, if they see guru 100 times, they offer 200 obeisances to guru. And the guru comes out of the room, goes into the room, comes in a temple, they are very respectful, generally speaking. But there are also people who may become offensive towards guru. In our society also there are people who, because of reading many books, because of spending many years in the movement, they have started finding fault with their own spiritual master, or with other spiritual master, or with very senior Vaishnavas. So we can tend to become offensive. Like, you know, like when we have a president's meeting in, say we have in Vrindavan or in Mayapur we go. So in the same meeting there are about 50 presidents of the temples and there are 4 or 5 gurus. So the gurus are also managing all over India and the presidents are also managing. So sometimes the guru, one of the gurus may propose a point, you know, in the meeting. And then we all are supposed to vote for it or not vote for it. You can imagine how difficult it is, situation, isn't it? See, we feel that all the gurus are an absolute platform. They are followers of Prabhupada. And if they are making a point and we have to vote for it, sometimes. And they would say, see, this is a managerial decision. One should not bring spiritual relationships inside. So you all put it aside, you know, and you have to, you know, say yes or no for it. It would be very difficult. And imagine that, you know, they are making a point and the president has a difference in opinion, for example. So it's very difficult to express. So that is why in ISKCON they are trying their best to separate the gurus from management. They are trying to do that. Keep the gurus only for spiritual activities and keep the managers for running the society. They are making a second level called as RGB, Regional Governing Body, which will run the ISKCON society, and the gurus will be able to freely travel and preach. They will not have to. So generally speaking, we can't argue with a very advanced person. Sometimes, you know, you ask a question to guru and he gives an answer. So it is not satisfying to you. What should you do? Prabhupada's nature was, he writes one of the disciples in Lilamata reading, he says his nature was that a disciple will ask a question to him and Prabhupada would answer. So is it clear? He will ask. And the disciple say, no Prabhupada, but you said like this, and again Prabhupada will convince him. He will answer for about 5-10 minutes. Okay, now I think it's clear, isn't it? But Prabhupada, again he will continue. So he will not leave him until the point, the person says. So he writes, one of his personal servants, he writes, he said, at last I admitted to Prabhupada, okay Prabhupada, now I am convinced, now you please, you take your prasadam, it's waiting for a long time. You know? But he said, actually I was not so convinced, but Prabhupada's compassion upon me was so dominant that it made me convinced. He said. So sometimes when we have a doubt, we may ask, but we should never argue. Because, you know, see, we have a question that comes from our intellect, but they have answer that is supported by their so many years of realizations. How many years they have spent in the movement? They have rendered practical service and they have deep realizations from their sadhana and their practical service, and they are telling an answer which we are not able to access. So then we can tell them, okay, probably what you are saying is true, but I am unable to understand it now. Please bless me that I will get a better understanding. So we can pray like that. So it is better to take a humble stand. No one should think that, you know, I know it. I have understood it. You know, I know what is right. I know what is truth. We cannot be very confident. That is why when you travel in our ISKCON society, all over, you come to know there are so many great souls. They are so exalted, they have such deep understanding, they have such deep commitment and surrender. And there is so much for us to learn. We find ourselves like a small, tiny child. We have no knowledge. Sometimes when I go to Mayapur, when I go to Vrindavan, when I go to different places, travel and see the great personalities, I feel, my Lord, I am insignificant. That's why sometimes going out is very good, meeting great people. So when we consider ourselves insignificant, then we will never become proud and will never think, I know the truth. Then in that humble mood we can surrender like Arjun. Sarva me tadritam manye, janma madasikeshava. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.